I mentioned to somebody out here in the hall that asked me what we're going to do, and I says, well, we're going to show you how to sell a $10,000 increasing term policy for quarterly premiums within less than an hour. Anyway, I'd like to, of course, we have to be brief and have some brevity here. There are a lot of applications to a lot of issues, you know, in our business, because now I'm wondering if many people really wonder what business they are in. When I came into business, there was a great big 100-foot wall between the stockbrokers and the banks and the insurance guys, and life was a lot more simple. And you didn't have a computer, which is a lethal weapon if you have any larceny in your bones. So I thought I would begin with this slide, which I think is intriguing. So Wall Street Journal published this slide, and I thought it said a lot. I know each of you folks are going to process some of this information in different ways. It depends on where you are in your career. What you perceive is real. I think it's worthy of note that years ago, there was a great teaching model that was taught by the opposite side, the company that became Franklin of Franklin Covey. And some of you may remember Hiram Smith, who taught that. But he had a very interesting teaching model that he would use in this kind of environment. And he said that metaphor type thing, he said, you know, everybody's born with a little thing strapped on their head and a rod that goes out here, and the end of this rod there is a window. And as you grow up and your mom and dad talk to you, this becomes your belief window based on, you know, how you process information and assimilate it. And so stuff gets written on this window. And so as you talk to people, they see things in this environment we live in today where we're absolutely drowning in information, which, as we all know, is not the truth necessarily, right? So the first thing, information is not the truth. But you don't know, you know, I don't know what's written on your window, but I know that some of the things I talk about, you're going to filter it through that window. And that's what every one of your clients will do based on conversations you're having. So I think it's fairly well known that if you tell the truth, it's easier to filter it through the window, even if you don't know it's the truth. When you tell things that are not so, something happens in the air. So I've always had the feeling that your obligation to your client is to be sure as he makes decisions, because you're the teacher, he has enough information to make the kinds of decisions that will give him the highest probability of reaching what goals he's working on. Okay? So there's a new term that I felt like has emerged from the situation that we're seeing in our federal government, that's called unintended consequences. And I see that there is a one of the things that I wanted to do today, in a teaching mode, is to help you contrast certain issues with those that are out there today. So if you'll remember this, that the perspective is just not a matter of what you see, but how you see it. And you can imagine that Roy and I probably hit all the speed bumps there are, and then some. We do know that buying term and investing the difference is not cheaper. Okay? That's maybe an inside joke, but there is a... another perception that I think all of us have to learn. This is from the book by Peter Senge. You should all read it. It's called The Fifth Discipline. It was written in the 90s. And basically what he said was that in our institutions, we are taught to break apart problems. And the idea being that if you break the problem into pieces, you can look at the little piece with more capacity. But he says, the words that he uses here are quite instructive. He says, when we try, up here where I've underlined it, we pay a hidden. He says, we think by breaking apart problems, we make complex tasks and subjects more manageable, but we pay a hidden, enormous price because we can no longer see the consequences of our actions. And when we try to see the big picture and try to reassemble the fragments in our minds and list and organize all the pieces, but then he quotes this physicist who says, it's like trying to reassemble a broken mirror. You cannot, from an economic standpoint, ignore the macro. And so that means that we just have to understand that there are certain things that are invisible, you know, but they're real. So with that in mind, I thought I would make one observation here in terms of the unintended consequences of what we call a poverty of perception, and that is probably a symptom of some of our challenges today in the world of economics. For example, some years ago, before some of the news that we're reading now, I clipped this out of the Saturday issue of the Deseret News. And you know who that is. See that? That's the Wells Fargo stage, if you can't make it out. But it does say the next stage is to put your home to work to achieve financial freedom. And then it goes on to say that for 4.5%, you can open this home equity line. But in the small print, you wouldn't want to know that this could be 18% someday, and we could come and get your house. So that was one of the unintended consequences of not understanding the macro, the enormous cost of debt. I read recently an article by M. Russell Ballard, who some of you will recognize. For some of you who don't, he's on the board of directors of this institution that co-sponsors this symposium. And he was speaking to the Marriott School Center opening for economic self-reliance. And I want you to notice he doesn't talk about an allocation model or any products. But he did say that the sad tale of those who are struggling to become self-reliant but in fact are becoming more dependent upon others because of the inability to think straight and apply common sense. Much of life's misery comes in the lack of using common sense. And he goes on to say the greatest need we have in our business and especially in the affairs of, you know, stuff you guys were all involved with, it says, teach people to think straight. It is not rocket science. But it does involve education, and you and I participating in that education. Now, that was a great point to make. And the contrast of that, because I was reading the opening remarks of a man who was giving a talk which was recorded in the Vital Speeches of the Year. Anybody subscribe to that magazine? Okay, there's one guy back there. Yeah, Pete, how are you? Peter. Well, he says, every time I'm introduced as a CEO, he was speaking to a group of people who had to budget and manage public school funds. Okay? And he's talking about a train wreck. It's a train wreck. And he says, I remember the tale of a man in a hot air balloon who realized he was lost in southwestern Ohio. He reduced altitude and spotted a woman below. He descended a bit and shouted to her, excuse me, can you help me? I promised a friend I would meet him an hour ago, but I don't know where I am. See, you visualize this? Guy's in a hot air balloon. He descends, let's see, and he comes down, and here's this woman standing by her BMW. And so he's down low enough to talk to her. And she says, well, you're in a hot air balloon hovering about 30 feet above the ground. As far as I can tell, you're between 40 and 41 degrees north latitude and 59 and 60 degrees west latitude. He said, you must be an accountant. I am, said the woman. How did you know? Well, answered the balloonist, everything you told me is technically correct. But I have no idea what to make of your information. And the fact is, I'm still lost. Frankly, you've not been much help at all, and if anything, you've delayed my trip. And the woman responded, well, then you must be a manager. Well, I am, said the balloonist, but how did you know? She said, well, you don't know where you are or where you're going. You've risen to where you are due to a large quantity of hot air. You made a promise which you have no idea how you're going to keep. The fact is, you're in exactly the same position you were before we met. And now somehow it's my fault. Well, that is that's a metaphor on a lot of issues in our culture today. I think to maybe explain that in terms of our culture, I have two or three pet themes. And they haven't changed in all these years. Here's one of them, though, that has been given voice. And I actually have some copies of this if you'd like it. But this comes out of a book called Against the Gods, The Remarkable Story of Risk by Peter Bernstein. Some of you will recognize that name. This is a great book. And you read this. Risk management lies in maximizing areas where we have some control over the outcome and minimize the areas where we have absolutely no control, because we cannot link cause and effect. Now, there's about a two-page explanation of this concept of cause and effect. And he's right on, because he said, you cannot attribute anything in investment stuff as luck. It's a matter of choice. If you say luck, then you relieve the person responsible for any responsibility for making the choice. So there's no such thing as luck. It's choice. And his logic is just, I think, irrefutable. But what I'm suggesting is the best thing we can do is help people understand cause and effect of certain decisions, like stuff that's written on their belief window. Now, I'd like to give you my opinion of one of the reasons, and I hope I don't offend anybody here, but I probably will. But I want to tell you that I've had my registration, my Series 7, since 1968. Has anybody in here had it longer than that? Okay. This is a photocopy of a slide of a standard prospectus for a mutual fund. Okay? And it defines total return. And then on the bottom paragraph, I'll read it to you. The total return of a class shows its overall change in value, including changes in share price. Now, you come down and it says, an average annual total return reflects the hypothetical annual compounded return that would have produced the same cumulative total if the performance had been constant over time. Because average returns, which they mean illustrated, tend to smooth out variations in the line, you should recognize they are not the same as the actual year-by-year results. So he just said there's no such thing as an average annual rate of return. And that is printed in any prospectus, might be worded differently, but it is there. And if you want to see something really lethal, you study, you take it upon yourself to study the difference in quoting those numbers. I mean, they're absolutely opposite ends of the spectrum. But again, it's a matter of helping people understand cause and effect. All you ever hear is average annual rate of return, average annual rate of return, average annual rate of return. Okay, the other one that I'm anxious to just review with you has to do, and I understand there's going to be a great presentation on life insurance. It's one of my pet themes. But here's another. I had a minor in economics at this school when it was first founded by Carl Mazur, but not quite that far back. This comes a first page out of a book you could buy at Barnes & Noble. It's called Economics for Idiots. It's real basic economics. It's like Samuelson, J.R., I don't know if you took economics. You probably did. You're so smart. Economics 101, it said, here's what. The basic law of economics is scarcity of resources. There's only so much money. You can't make it back. Law of economics is there is a finite resource in every family. The only thing we're seeing is the government has socialized and monetized the debt. It just printed more money. Big issue. Finite resources. That has something to do with, you know, any of you see this parody by Steve Martin? It came over on some website a couple of years ago about this interview he's having with this guy. He says, you mean I have to have money? You know, it's absolute crack up. I wish I'd have been able to retrieve it and show it as part of this. The other concept is, the other issue is how we deal in our personal financial affairs with the cost of interest and compounded returns. You could use this analogy with facilitate a discussion of compound tax. You know what I'm talking about? You get a 1099 on your compound account and so on. That's cost. So it has an effect visibly of, you know, and visibly of reducing the overall efficiency of what you're trying to do. I've always loved this discussion with permanent life insurance. Because what I've done here, I wish I had my little pointer, but you'll notice in column one, up here, we've got $100 a month going into this compound interest account, which is just a plain vanilla CD, okay? No tax, no anything, just compound interest at 8%. And we go down here, and we come down at age 65, which is here, seems like a logical place to stop. And you can see if I put $100 a month away, $1,200 a year, at 8%, I have $363,892. However, in this column, we show one withdrawal of $750 a second year. Then we just keep going. But by doing that, I reduce the balance by $42,000. Now, the best source of that information is a first-class merit badge in personal management. It's right there. Two pages. Compound interest. The cost of compounded interest. Now, as you go across, you'll see over here in the second column, the illustration, we pull out $5,995. Same deal. Never pay it back. Now, my account is down to $225,000. And then, of course, the third column shows it probably paid tuition out here. These were randomly. We just inserted these randomly in our calculation just to drive a point. So I've withdrawn less than $20,000 out of this account. Over 40 years, it reduces my balance to $129,000. It's a big deal, isn't it? If this was a whole life policy and you paid the interest on the loan and never paid it back, the difference would be the sum total of those withdrawals, because you do not break the curve. And a 25-year guy in the business the other day said, huh? How come? I said, because they send you their money. They don't send you your money in a traditional program. So I don't know how you add that in to calculating what the actual yield on a financial decision is, but it's a piece of it, isn't it? Of course it is. So you could actually say, I could get less and get more. Is that right? That makes sense. Okay, the last slide I would show has got to be one of the best. Thank you. I think one of the most interesting, because I've used this in so many places, and it started out arguing with a CPA firm on the most efficient way to retire an estate tax liability using 6166. Everybody know what section 6166 is, right? That's a code section that says if you qualify under certain terms, it's two or three pages of, you can pay off your estate tax obligation over 15 years in installments. You pay interest for 5 years, and then you pay installment payments for the next 10 years, and you can retire it. So I use that as a way to calculate the cost of doing that. And I've used the same thing now in a buy and sell situation. If you have a person who has a buy and sell plan but does not plan, he plans to fund it by himself out of the business. And if you have this, I have handouts on this if you want to take the and build your own spreadsheet, because it's just a spreadsheet calculation. So as you can see, what I've done up here, it says you're going to buy it in installments over 10 years, retire debt, paying annual interest at 8%, which, you know, is probably a dream. He's in a 34% tax bracket, and he makes 14% on every dollar of sales. That's his margin in his business. So I thought, well, okay, how much is he going to have to sell to raise enough money to pay the tax and make a principal and interest payment of $149,000 the first year? Start watching what I'm doing here. So as you can see, to retire a $1 million debt over 10 years, if you could get the financing, he's going to pay $1.4 million, so he didn't reduce the cost, did he? But he had to, every year, on the outside column, make that much in his sales. So he's got an earmark, $14,300,000, in the next 10 years to retire $1 million of debt, and he's not there. I've taken apps on the first meeting with this idea, because it's impossible to do. But you don't ever translate it. If you have a physician who does billing for time, insert billing for time. This is a retail sales deal. Recently, I had a discussion with one of my clients in the real estate business, and we agreed that every million of insurance he has in force when he dies is like guaranteeing 10 million of retail sales with no taxes by contract. And I mean, it makes a lot of sense, has a lot of power. So in our discussions about unintended consequences and just, you know, pure, simple, common sense economics, can bear fruit. That's probably where I'll quit right now and turn the time over to Roy. Thanks for being here, guys.
We were out talking at lunch, and we got talking about politics. And I'm just going to tell you what I heard out there. Did anybody here old enough to remember when we had Ronald Reagan, President Johnny Cash, Bob Hope? You remember that?
Yes.
What do we got now? Obama, no cash, no hope. Is that the way it is? Well, you know, we stand, well, I don't know how I got back there already. How about reversing? We stand at the crossroads each minute, each hour, each day. We make choices. We choose the thoughts we allow ourselves to think, the actions we allow ourselves to perform. And we make these choices based on the value system. Bo reverted to this a little bit. But we make these choices based on the value system we have selected to govern our lives. Now, in choosing that value system is probably the most important decision, at least one of the most important decisions we're ever going to make. Those that believe that there is a God that made this world and everything in it are going to make different choices than those that don't. If you have clear values, it's much easier to make decisions. Now, I want to ask a question first. Why are we in this business? High commissions? Prestige? Why are we in this business? I think the major reason we are in this business, or at least ought to be in this business, is to improve the quality of lives of those we serve and their families. Would you buy that concept? If we're in that for some other reason, I'm not too sure we're not going to have a problem down the road. Now, if we're going to serve other people and help them get their lives in order, do you think we ought to have our lives in order? Okay, today I want to talk about a little concept about keeping your life in balance. Now, I'm using this like a wheel. Brian said I spent a couple years in mainland China teaching English. You didn't even know I could speak it. You know, if you're from Hiram, how can you speak English? But anyway, we had a good time there. And just incidentally, by the way, I guess the last time we went and did that was about 4 or 5 years ago. We were in Tongji University in Shanghai. They have more than 3,000 universities in China. And they rank them like we might say Harvard's the most famous in the U.S. Well, Tongji is probably in the top 15, maybe like a Stanford. 54,000 students. My job was English classes, and by the way, they didn't give me a manual, they didn't give me a curriculum, and I had people that had their master's degree, understood English, and could read English, but had spoken it very little. And so it was kind of fun, but anyway, we just got into basic things. And I used some of this concept. They ride a lot of bicycles in China. So I'd say, now, if you've hit your bicycle pretty hard when you're riding this bike and you get that out of whack, how is it going to, you're going to have a little rougher ride through life? You know, I mean, or you're going down the freeway breaking the speed limit after you hit the gutter pretty hard on that thing. Is it a little bumpy ride? Does it kind of look like this? Is that a little rough ride? You think you're going to have a bump or two in your day? Well, let's fill this wheel out. Let's just go out and let's talk about what parts of our wheel do we need to keep in balance each time. Starting out with emotional. That's a lot of attitude, but your emotional health. I mean, you got to have self-confidence. Well-being. You just got to really kind of self-assured. But what is it? It's attitude. Now, I could have put the whole thing, you've probably already seen this, but Charles Swindoll, this is part of what he said, I am convinced that life is 10% what happens to me and 90% how I react to it. You know, when we heard the first speaker this morning, do you think that he applied that? You know, that is kind of an important thing. Keep your life, your attitude is very important. What's the next part of the wheel we're going to talk about? We're talking about emotional health. By the way, I have a handout for you that's going to have this wheel on and some other things. And Brian's going to get that one. Not yet. They'll read it and won't listen. Isn't that what they told me? So anyway, you can all have a handout before you go. But, you know, we're taking care of ourselves. We talked about emotional health. Let's talk about physical health. What do we have to do? We don't have a lot of time, so I'm just kind of hurry through this. Eat right. Man, we could spend all day talking about that, but you know what we're talking about. Proper exercise. We ought to kind of avoid the furniture disease. You know what the furniture disease is? That's where your chest drops into your drawers. You know, it'd be good to do that. We ought to have proper rest. And maybe avoid harmful drugs, alcohol, limit the smoking. I really got a kick of this next one in China. I would show this. You know, they have the one-child policy. There's 119 live male births in China per 100 a female. That's been going on now for 30 years. And right now, there are more than 80 million, not 1,000, 80 million more boys in China than girls. So I would use this too. I'd say, you know what? If I were you guys, I'd shape up. 19 out of 100 of you aren't going to find a wife. You might want to talk off smoking, drinking, gambling, drugs, pornography. You might want to get a good education, learn how to earn and manage money. They would buy that concept. But I'd show them this thing. I said, you know this beautiful gal? And by the way, this is all one picture. That's before smoking. What happens after smoking? That is the identical picture just turned over. So we need to take care of that. Okay, we don't have a lot of time. Let's move on to the next part, vocation education. When you finish school, are you through learning? If you are, you're going to be behind. Isn't that true? You must continue to learn and progress. By the way, I'm going to have all this. This will be the stuff on here. Most of it will be on the handouts. Make proper use of your skills, energy, time, imagination, concentration. Concentration is an interesting thing. Are you concentrating on your business? I've always, if you have a gold mine, and I think our business is a gold mine. If you have a business like this, why do you go looking for another one? Do you really think you're going to be successful as a financial advisor and as an Amway distributor? He who chases two jackrabbits will end up losing them both. Now, you think that's true? Try chasing two jackrabbits. I think you'll find out that'd be a true statement. Well, now, our business is financial. Oh, man, is this fun to talk about finances? By the way, when I was in China, I started out so basic. I said, what? There are only two things in the world that earn money. What do you think they are, Gregory? People at work and money at work. Is that about as simple as you can get? I said, do you know any lazy people? Yeah, do they earn anything? No. Do you have any lazy money? Yeah, I mean, you see what you're trying to get them to think about? I mean, is that interesting? Very simple, basic things that you talk about money. But spend less than you earn. Is that a simple concept? Does everybody you know do that? Now, Bo was showing an interest chart up here a little while ago. I have a friend, and this is a true story. And one day at lunch, he had gray hair like Bo and I had, and we were sitting around, four or five of us. This was 10 years ago. He came in, and he said, man, this is the days when mutual funds were doing well. He says, man, my mutual funds are doing well. I said, what do you mean they're doing well? He said, my mutual funds have gone up $35,000 this week. I said, how much you got in those mutual funds? And he said, oh, a little more than $3 million. I mean, he caught my attention in a hurry. Now, he was older than I was. I says, okay, tell me your story. He said, well, when my wife and I graduated from the University of Utah in the 50s, that was a while back, he said, we decided we would save $100 a month. And he said, we have never missed, and it's been 45 years. We've never missed a month. Consistency is another thing that really pays off. So I look on the chart. Now, if he earned 15% and he just went 40 years at 100 a month, he would have $1,340,000. No, $3,100,000. I said that backwards. $3,140,000. Well, he had done it. Now, he put a little more in a few times, and he didn't always get 15%, but the consistency was what paid off. Now, let me ask you another simple question like that. Let's say you found the best credit card company you could ever find. Only charge 15%, never anymore. You go in debt $100 a month for 40 years. How much do you owe? $3,140,000. So what am I telling you? There's two kinds of people when it comes to understanding interest. Those that understand it, collect it. Those that don't understand it, pay it. Now, is that about as simple as you can get? Let's say that Bo and I were, we didn't even go to the same school. He came down here and I went to Utah State. But let's say we were buddies all the time. And, you know, Bo's pretty smart. I mean, after graduating from school, we got a job in the same company. We bought houses next door to each other in the same subdivision. We had the same number of kids, and our house payments were the same. We were earning the same amount of money, and Bo is just doing well. I mean, he was a thrifty guy. He saved $10,000. Now, is that a lot to save? Maybe not, but he saved $10,000, and he was smart. He's earning 8% on it. You know, we're not doing quite so well. I mean, the rain, it's raining on me, the sun's shining on him. I'm not as smart as Bo. And, you know, I owe $10,000. Charge cards, car, and I'm paying an average of 16%. Is that a lot to owe and a lot to pay? Do you know people that do that now? Probably do. Well, my wife says, I don't understand it. How come the Grahams can go out on the weekend, go to the movie, buy a sandwich? How come we can't do it? We earn the same. Our payments are the same. Something's wrong. Well, figure this out. He is collecting $800. I'm paying $1,600. That's a difference of $2,400 a year. That's a difference of $200 a month, $50 a week, on the littlest example I can come up with. That kind of... Now, put another zero on both of them. Does that make sense? Is that possible? Do you get the concept of interest? If you don't understand interest in our business, Bo alluded to this a number of times there. It really makes sense. But don't ever give up. You know, you really need to, if you're not doing it yet, start now. You've probably all seen that before. Well, what's the next thing we're going to talk about? Relationships. Who is the most important person you ought to have a good relationship with? Yourself. If you don't feel good about yourself, who will? Probably your mother. She never thinks you're bad. But even your spouse won't feel like you're very good if you don't feel good. You've got to have a good relationship there. Spouse, family, extended family, people you work with. You got to learn to treat people like you'd have them treat you. Now, here's an important one. Learn to love people and use things. Don't love things and use people. Where will you be if you keep doing that? Maybe out the point of the mountain. It'll eventually catch up with you. So you really need to worry about that. Now, what have I put in the center of the wheel? Does the center of the wheel hold things together? I mean, it really does. Now, you need to have integrity, character, be thoughtful, be helpful. You know, the softest pillow you will ever lay your head on is that of a clear conscience. Now, you know, when I was in China, we had two rules. One, never badmouth the Chinese government. Number two, never teach any church doctrine. So I come up with a new deal. They didn't mind this. These are concepts. If it's not true, don't say it. If it's not yours, don't take it. If it's not the right thing to do, don't do it. And they'll say, this is a good idea. You know, they can buy that concept in a hurry. So it's very interesting to do that. But now, let's just talk about this for a minute. Do you have to have all parts? What if you declare bankruptcy on your financial? Does that just affect finances? Or does it affect your attitude? Maybe even your health? Maybe your relationships, your spirituality, your work? If you go home tonight and your wife says, I've had it, you're out. Relationships, does it just affect relationships? I mean, you get the concept. If you take up hardcore drugs, you know, and it affects you physically, does it just affect you physically? Or does it affect the whole thing? Can you see what I'm trying to do? Now, let's turn it around. Let's say you do very well on being healthy and in two or three of these. Does that help you help the others? Now, has there ever been anybody, we talked to a number of people this morning, talked about bumps in life. I'm talking about bumps on your wheel. Don't look at them as major catastrophes. Get the right attitude and look at them as learning opportunities for growth. Nobody's going to go through life without having a bump or two. But if you know which part of your problem is the problem, which part of the wheel is your problem, is it going to help you? I think it can really help you. I don't know what else. When do we quit? Okay, I'm going to tell you one little. I mean, the life insurance business. I got licensed in 1962. Bo got licensed 1960. He must be a lot older than me. We were gonna have Ruland Rasmussen with us here today, and Ruland's got a knee operation, an emergency thing. He had to be here. The three of us met one day out to Bo's office. Ruland says, you know, ask me when I started, ask Bo when he started and when he did, and he added the three of us up, and he says, we've only got 160 years between the three of us in the business. Now, when I first started in the business, I was working with Standard Insurance. And we somehow, I didn't get any part of it, but we had the group insurance for the state of Utah employees. And I didn't have the right political card to get any commissions in it. And it was political. But I was just starting, and every other week I went up to the state capitol, and the gal running the insurance let me write down the names of those that retired and those that quit. And I would call them up and say, you got 30 days to convert your insurance. And if they converted it, I didn't make a dime. So I did do a few. But I said, would you mind if we gave you a physical exam? And then I earned a couple of bucks. Well, they didn't have a lot of money. And I'm just thinking of one case particularly. I sold the guy a $2,000 policy. And you know, when I went back and delivered it, his wife says, I ought to have some. I sold her a $1,000 policy. I don't think they do that anymore. And he lived about 3 or 4 years. Now, he lived on 11th East in Salt Lake and 2-something South in a little tiny white frame home. He died. I went down, visited his widow, settled the death claim for $2,000. She was so grateful. And we changed the beneficiary to her oldest son. I didn't know who the oldest son was. I had no clue. Well, about a year later, I see in the paper she died. And I said, what am I going to do with this situation? This is tough. So I knew the day of the funeral. And when the funeral was over, I went down to the house. And there were kids playing in the yard. And I thought, well, I got to go in and tell somebody, ask who's Mark is. I knew his first name was Mark. I knocked on the door, and there are five kids with spouses sitting around. Could half of them standing because there was no room to put 10 around any table in that house. About five of them were sitting down, five were standing. I said, look, I sold your mother a little life insurance policy. I just want to know who Mark is so I can get with him. He said, come in, we need to talk to you. We are holding a meeting here, and they had no money in their checking account. The funeral was roughly $1,000, and we've just decided that each one of us are going to pay $200. And he said, we don't have it. Some of them were in their early 30s, did not have $200. And I said, let me tell you that it's only $1,000. And they started to cry. Now, I mean, I don't know why. You know, that's why we're in the business, to help people. It really is important that we do that. Now, let me just end with saying, I think another very important part of life is to learn to laugh and to smile. To laugh is to love. To laugh is to understand. To laugh is to forgive. Laughter can bring a feeling of ease to people that are not normally at ease with themselves or others. A smile costs nothing, yet it creates a lot. It enriches happiness in the home. It fosters goodwill in business. It's the countersign of friends. It's daylight to the discouraged, sunshine to the sad, and nature's best antidote for trouble. Yet, a smile cannot be begged, bought, borrowed, or stolen, for it is no earthly good to anyone until it's given away. So if in the course of the day, some of your friends and acquaintance are too tired to give you a smile, why don't you give them one of yours? Nobody needs a smile quite so much as those who have none to give. Thank you.